Good evening. And welcome to everyone who's joining us on the internet. Last week I reminded all of you of the good news that you're all puppets. Serving one of two teachers, and there's no other choice. And I also made it clear to you that it was my purpose, as it is every time I'm with you, but more pointedly last time we were together, that my purpose was to undermine your self-confidence. You see, what you consider to be your greatest strengths are actually your greatest weaknesses. Because whatever self-confidence you personally have in your personal private capacity to function well and to be an effective presence, whatever strengths you count yourself as having, reinforce your determination to do things by yourself. To do things by yourself to means to be doing it solo, separate and apart, authoritative in your own right. And yet it's this determination and the enacting of that determination that keeps you from having the curiosity or even the experience of need necessary to ask the Holy Spirit for help. And what is the Holy Spirit? Nothing more than your right mind. So if you're determined not to connect with your right mind, it means you're determined to be unconscious of what you are and what everything is. You're determined to define everything yourself and live according to your make-believe world. Now, how can that be described as anything but a weakness? To be unconscious of what you are and what everything is weakness. We talked about the fact that the key is, before you respond to anything, hesitate and ask of the Holy Spirit. What is the meaning of this? What is appropriate here? You see, you break the isolation and you break the arrogant self-determination and you leave yourself open for an experience other than the ones you've had in the past and a perspective different from what you say you have enjoyed in the past. And you lay the groundwork for, or you provide the environment in which a shift of perception can occur. A shift of perception being what? A miracle. That's what you're all aiming for, or you wouldn't be with me each week. But it's easy to forget. The habit of independence, the habit of self-confidence is strong. And not only that, you have incorporated into your make-believe self and world the idea that it's your purpose to improve your skills, to improve your capacity to function independently well. It is your purpose to do that, to secure your credibility, your integrity, your respectability. You see? So it's a hard habit to let go of, because you're so conditioned to think that the loss of your self-confidence and the loss of your capacity to behave independently will constitute a loss of integrity, a loss of all that's meaningful and important about existing for you. So it's not an easy habit to break, but it is a habit which must be broken if the ultimate good that all of you want is to become your conscious experience. You cannot use that which is a denial of all that is true about you as a means of getting to the experience of all that is true about you. And so I'm here to keep reminding you that the path you've been on is one that denies the possibility of arriving at the destination you have made up to be at the end of this path. So that you will do what? So that you'll hesitate. Maybe you won't take the next step on that path, taking you to the place that you didn't want to go. The path that won't take you where you do want to go. So that you can reconnoiter. That's what you're doing when you hesitate a moment and you say, Father, or you say, Holy Spirit, what's the truth here? You're reconnoitering. You're putting yourself in a position where a change of direction can occur. And if you're considering the possibility of a change of direction, you are weakening the commitment you've had to reach the destination you thought you could reach by determinedly moving forward on this road, this path that won't take you where you want to go. Now, I am with you at every single moment. You don't listen for me at every single moment, but I'm there. Even though you don't listen for me at every moment, you, through a constructive use of your memory, can remember to hesitate as often as possible during the course of each day and express a little curiosity to see outside of the box, to see outside of the make-believe world you've made up for alternatives that you can't possibly come up with through the use of your imagination. For alternatives that will free you from the suffering which is inseparable from your being on a road that leads to what you don't want, even though you believe it is going to lead you to the ultimate. So, the need is to hesitate and inquire. And why do you inquire? So that you can have a clearer perception yourself, unlike your poor neighbor, so that you can be clearer than somebody else? No. You ask because you have chosen to have an object of your affection, whether it is a tree or a plant or a brother or a sister. You have chosen to have an object of your affection, something or someone to whom you are willing to give an acknowledgement of their divinity, an acknowledgement of what they essentially are, separate and apart from what you have come to believe they are. And why do you do this? Because until you make a gift of the acknowledgement of what is true about a thing, it doesn't become yours. This is the exact opposite of the way the world works. I'm not talking about the world that you see when you look out. I'm talking about the world that all of you and everyone else has made up in your minds that you are serving, and in the process of serving that world of concepts, you are missing each other, and you are not recognizing the kingdom of heaven that you're right in the middle of. So, when you turn to the Holy Spirit to break the isolation, the reason you do it is to become aware of the truth about your world or your fellow man, so that you might extend your new awareness of what it is, so that you might be undefended against what you've made up about your world or your brothers and sisters, and actually connect with them, who they really are. So you break the isolation in two ways. You break it by abandoning your self-confidence and asking of someone or something that has the larger picture to uncover the larger picture to you, to show it to you. So you've broken the isolation in that way. And then the fact that that's not all of it comes into play. You ask to know the truth so that you may extend the acknowledgement of what is true to an object of your affection, or we could say an object of your attention. And there, you're breaking the isolation as well. You see, it's very simple. When you have imaginations about your brothers and sisters, when you've determined who and what they are, and what kind of person they are, you have isolated yourself from who they really are. You've made yourself very private. So when you're willing to see who they really are, you're abandoning and weakening that attempt to be autonomous and private as well. Now, all of this that I've been talking about comes under the heading of healing, the correction of false perception, the being healed of misunderstanding everything. and behaving as though your misunderstanding is true understanding, thus causing you to behave in a way totally inconsistent with what's really there, and arousing reaction, creating chaos. One of the key sentences last week was, the therapist, or we could say the healer, does not heal. He lets healing be. The Holy Spirit is the only therapist. He makes healing perfectly clear in any situation in which he is the guide. Again, be careful, because it's so easy to think that you are deferring to something better than you, something different from you. But all you're deferring to is that which is nothing more than your right mind, which you don't recognize as yours, because you have for so long been entranced with the make-believe you and the make-believe world that you made up. The make-believe you can't heal a damn thing, because it doesn't really exist as something that can do anything. So yes, you have to defer to the Holy Spirit. You have to reach out to that which seems not to be you. So that reintegration of your sense of identity with what you really are can occur. The human therapist can only let him, the Holy Spirit, fulfill his function. See, that's what's so insulting to the ego. You gotta let somebody else do the work and get the credit. But it will only seem as though something else is getting the credit while you have yourself misidentified in your own mind. But leaning into that which you don't recognize as yourself is the only way to escape your addiction to your misidentification. And so you must do it whether it feels natural to you or not. So, let's continue in the book. The awareness of the Holy Spirit. How can you become increasingly aware of the Holy Spirit in you except by his effects? Well, let's stop for a moment. You reach out to the Holy Spirit. You let the Holy Spirit fill you up until you are so full that it overflows and extends to your brother, and your brother is healed. Your brother is transformed. Your brother experiences a change in his experience. Because it hasn't felt like you have done anything, because of course you are still identifying with your misperception, even though you're reaching out to that which is the only real thing in you, the only way you can tell that you have done anything is by the effect of the movement of the Holy Spirit. The only way you can tell that you're on the right track is not because you can see directly a cause and effect relationship started by you and affecting your brother, but because a change has occurred that you can't take credit for, and yet you know you were inseparable from. It's sort of like being hooked up to equipment that can tell whether you're in an alpha state, a theta state, and so on. And it's hooked up to a little model railroad. And the more centered and at peace you become, the train begins to go around the track. It's going around the track because you're doing less and less. And the less you do, the faster it goes. And if you try to make it go, it will stop. And so, here it is, going around the track. You see the effect of what? Of your backing out of a place of authority, a supposed capacity to make things happen, and to move out of an aggressive frame of mind into your peace. And so as a result of your doing less and less, more and more happens. And because of the effect, and because of the fact that the wires are hooked up to you, you know you had something to do with it. You know that if indeed you wanted the train to go around and around, you were doing something right, even though the something right that you were doing was less and less of anything. The less you did, the less you do, the more it goes. So it's like a lesson in reverse. You learn that the only way to be truly effective is to abandon trying to be effective. And as you have that experience more and more, it becomes easier and easier to let nothing be done by you from an independent frame of mind, knowing that the less you do, the more will be done. As you let yourself have that experience, you begin to have a new experience of identity. What you begin to recognize as you is the absence of doing anything yourself, privately. And so the evidence of your being on the right track helps to provide you with a new source of the experience of your identity. In effect, the more consistently you let the Holy Spirit come through you, because you, as a personal authorizer, is doing less and less, the more opportunity you have to find out the real meaning, together with the real experience of being what you truly are. But you must let yourself into that place where something can happen that you can't take credit for, but because you're inseparable from it happening, you know that it must have something to do with you. It's just not the you, the authoritative you, the skillful you that you used to practice being and get your sense of identity from. How can you become increasingly aware of the Holy Spirit in you except by His effects? You cannot see Him with your eyes, nor hear Him with your ears. Mind you, this Him is nothing more than your right mind. How then can you perceive Him at all? If you inspire joy and others react to you with joy, even though you are not experiencing joy yourself, there must be something in you that is capable of producing it. If it is in you and can produce joy, and if you see that it does produce joy in others, you must be dissociating it in yourself. Well, it isn't like dissociating it in yourself is some new experience caused by virtue of your doing something right and the train goes around the track. What it amounts to is that if you are letting the Holy Spirit be through you, and there are blessings that you see are experienced by others that you know you were part of, even though you weren't the originator of the movement of the joy that's experienced. You, by virtue of what you have done and seen, should be having the experience of what was given being made your own. And if you're not, it's because you are dissociating all of it from you. Again, this isn't something new, but when it happens, you are in a position of being able to clearly see the dynamic. You've been dissociated all along. Now, dissociated, oh, a psychological word, what a name. You know, what does that mean? Well, we'll take Paul as an example. Poor Paul. He has devoted 23 years of his life to let the Holy Spirit speak, to let it come through him. And when he does, he's not in any state of tension, any state of confusion, any experience of unworthiness, and yet, by the same token, any worth that's there, any clarity that's there, is nothing he can take credit for as the private, separate, independent Paul that he thought he was as he was growing up. But just wait until after the gathering is over. And he puts me on the back shelf, which means he stops listening. He stops He abandons the joining. And now Paul says, wow. Oh, he looks around at those who listen to me when he's letting me speak. And he says, damn, they don't seem to be learning anything. Oh, well, you see, there's the dissociation right there. The dissociation is that he left the place of being joined to have thoughts of his own. That's what the dissociation is. So now there's Paul on Sunday nights. And there's Paul every other month on the internet. An afternoon with Raj, and on the alternate months, there are larger numbers of people present. And then there's Paul in between. I don't mean to say that he abandons me totally, but he does dissociate. And he wonders what the heck good it's been for him to spend 23 years with no more results, with no more evidence of benefit. And yet, it isn't as though those who listen to me don't share with Paul that there's benefit. What it boils down to is that he's saying, well, what am I getting out of it? Meaning, what does this made-up I, what is it getting out of it? Well, it's not getting anything out of it. Of course, like right now when he's letting me speak, he's not experiencing or having any of the thoughts that have to do with inequity. It's only when he dissociates himself from it that he, in his right to have his own made-up thoughts, makes up the worst thoughts you can imagine that cause him to feel bad and useless and worthless. Because after all, for a good part of 23 years, the made-up Paul hasn't done much, because the real Paul has let what is real happen. You see what I'm saying? You cannot see the Holy Spirit with your eyes, nor hear him with your ears. How then can you perceive him at all? Well, here's how. If you inspire joy, and others react to you with joy, even though you are not experiencing joy yourself, there must be something in you that is capable of producing it. If it is in you and can produce joy, and if you see that it does produce joy in others, you must be dissociating it in yourself. Which really means you must be dissociating yourself from it in you. And you do the dissociating by claiming the right to think for yourself and have your own personal private viewpoint, in which the real function of your being becomes unavailable to you, because you're choosing not to pay attention to it. You're choosing not to have it as the object of your attention. So you dissociate yourself from all that is true. By giving conscious preference to what you preferred to make up about everything, and living in that imagination. It's that simple. Continuing. It seems to you that the Holy Spirit does not produce joy consistently in you only because you do not consistently arouse joy in others. Well, why don't you consistently arouse joy in others? Because they're not the object of your attention. They're not the object of your affection. Who you have made yourself up to be is. You see? Their reactions to you are your evaluations of his consistency. When Paul is just being Paul, existing in his memory of who he is, his made-up structures of who he is. But he doesn't inspire much joy in anybody. He may not be a problem for everyone, but you know what? The train isn't moving. The movement that arises out of union isn't occurring. And so whatever appears to happen can't really be fulfilling. Not fulfilling capital P purpose. Continuing, when you are inconsistent, you will not always give rise to joy. And so you will not always recognize His, the Holy Spirit's, consistency. And you know what? That's what makes you miserable. That's what makes Paul miserable, grouchy, fussy, not too happy with his lot in life, because after all of this devotion, he hasn't gotten that much out of it. But the he that hasn't gotten much out of it is the conceptual he that he holds in his mind. It isn't getting much out of it because it can't take credit for any of the good stuff that's happening. What you offer to your brother, you offer to him, the Holy Spirit. Because he cannot go beyond your offering in his giving. What you offer to your brother, you offer to the Holy Spirit. Let's reverse it to make sense. What you offer to the Holy Spirit in terms of your attention and in terms of your willingness to yield to Him and not function solo, that willingness is what ends up being given to your brother, because the Holy Spirit can be through you and therefore something of value ends up being extended to your brother. So what you offer to your brother, let's say it's not much, you offer to the Holy Spirit, not much, in terms of attention and willingness to let the Holy Spirit in. Make sense? It's not really complicated, even though your ego can say, now that is a mind bender and I'm going to have to take a while to understand that. What you offer to your brother, you offer to him. If you offer little to the Holy Spirit, you're offering little to your brother. If you look at your brother and say, yeah, what can I expect? She's a nerd or she's a jerk, you know. What are you offering? Not much. And in that state of mind, you're not offering much of your attention to the Holy Spirit either, because you're really pleased with your skill in being able to squarely peg your sister and assess her correctly. You see, what you offer to your brother or your sister, you offer to the Holy Spirit. Because he cannot go beyond your offering in his giving. The Holy Spirit cannot give more than you're willing to let in. And so only what you let in can end up being extended to your brother. Again, what you offer to your brother, you offer to him, the Holy Spirit, because He, the Holy Spirit, cannot go beyond your offering in His giving. This is not because He limits His giving. It's not because the Holy Spirit limits His giving, but simply because you have limited your receiving. And how do you limit your receiving? By dissociating from that which is nothing more than your right mind, and utilizing the blank space that's left in your mind to provide your own definitions and meanings to fill it up. And that's all that you can possibly extend to your brother and sister, except that the gift you extend in that frame of mind is always a gift of subtraction. It always leaves your brother and sister less whole. Not as whole, less whole. Again, the continuing, the will to receive is the will to accept. The will to receive is not something your ego is capable of doing. So I want you to know that whenever you arrive at a point where you're willing to say help, where you're willing to reach out to the Holy Spirit, where you're willing to abandon your isolation and let something else in, you move out of the realm of subtraction. You move into the realm of addition. And what is given does not deplete you, but becomes yours as well. Continuing, if your brothers are part of you, will you accept them? Only they can teach you what you are, and your learning is the result of what you taught them. Now, this might sound a little bit like gibberish, but bear with me. If your brothers are part of you, will you accept them? Only they can teach you what you are, and your learning is the result of what you taught them. What you call upon in them, you call upon in yourself. And as you call upon it in them, it becomes real to you. These sentences express singularity. It says that no matter how many there seem to be of you and your brothers, there's only one thing going on. Your brothers teach you who you are. No. Your brothers teach you what you are. Your brothers teach you what you are by virtue of their clear or unclear behavior, their clear or unclear thinking. They teach you what you are by providing you with the opportunity to engage in this hesitation that causes you to turn to the Holy Spirit. that causes you to experience an infilling, which you may not feel totally yet, but which will overflow and be extended. And when it is received, you have the evidence of the movement and the evidence of what you are. The puppet, the place where God manifests, not you manifest, but where God manifests. Or your brother's clear or unclear thinking and behavior based upon it causes you to not hesitate, but to move forward like a bulldozer from your best judgments and really put your brother in his place. Or move him to the best of your made-up ability to cause him to find himself in a better place than he was. But see, even if your brother's behavior changes and his way of seeing himself seems to have improved, the train still hasn't moved around the track because you were never joined in the place of peace and real union. Hell, your brother might, his behavior might improve, and he might be happier because you taught him through your skill and expertise how to Jew his brother out of money, how to behave in business practices that are sleazy but which make you a million. You see, no train has gone around the track, even if your brother seems happier. You see what I'm saying? Only they can teach you what you are by bringing into play which mode of being you choose to practice, joined or unjoined. And your learning is the result of what you taught them. Give nothing, get nothing. Oh, that is the learning you're supposed to be getting. But everybody is so persistently committed to being successful independently that no one wants to acknowledge that it isn't working. And so learning doesn't occur. And the lesson your brother is teaching you isn't registering with you. Only they can teach you what you are, and your learning is the result of what you taught them. What you call upon in them, you call upon in yourself. And as you call upon it in them, it becomes real to you. You call upon nothing in them. You call upon living out of habit. You call that forth from them. And that's what you get to keep for yourself. And there's no learning there. But it reinforces your ignorant state. And because of this ethic that you have programmed into your made-up sense of self, you take this experience as a call for an even greater exertion of effort on your part to do better next time, so that, without hesitating and breaking the isolation, you might do a better job than you did this time. That's why it's called insanity. God has but one Son. Knowing them all as one. God has only one creation, no matter how infinite it is. God has but one Son, knowing them all as one. Only God Himself is more than they, but they are not less than He is. As I've said before, God withholds nothing of what He is in His expression of you. I have also said that you can say, God is all there is of me, but I am not God. Again, only God Himself is more than they, His sons. But they are not less than He is. Would you know what this means? That doesn't mean, would you know what it means if it came up and slapped you on the side of the face? It means, would you really want to know what that means? Would you want to know what that means enough to explore what it means? By doing things different, by hesitating that moment and abandoning your mental habits of misidentifying yourself and your world, the kingdom of heaven. Would you know what this means? If what you do to my brother, you do to me. Here's another gobbledygook sentence that simply expresses a singularity. This and that are this. And that and this are this. Because everything is this. Only this is going on. No matter how many that's there are, it's all this. It's all one thing going on. It's one thing infinitely self-expressed. It's creation. It's what God is being infinitely. If what you do to my brother, you do to me. And if you do everything for yourself, because we are part of you, everything we do belongs to you as well. It's like, no matter what angle you look at this from, no matter how many different angles you look at it from, it's all the same thing going on. There just isn't anything private. It's only when you claim to be autonomous, you imagine that you can be autonomous, that you can seem to have things that are yours that others can't have and don't have, and that others can have that you don't have and can't have. Every soul God created is part of you and shares His glory with you, God's glory with you. His glory belongs to Him, but it is equally yours. God's glory belongs to God, but it is equally yours. God has withheld nothing of what He is in His expression of you, and your brother, and the tree, and the sow bug. You cannot then be less glorious than He is. and you can't be less glorious than your brother is, and your brother or sister can't be less glorious than you are, no matter how well you have described them in the most unfortunate words to be less than you, you just can't afford to maintain this sense of autonomous, isolated existence. Because it blinds you to what you are, it blinds you to what your brother is, it blinds you to God. It blinds you to all that is, as I've said before, awesomely, profoundly meaningful every day you wake up and you open your eyes and what your eyes fall on is profound. Because it's God being that. Your experience of your identity will uncover to you that your brother's identity is identical to yours. That you and your brother are one. One in being. One in nature. One in character. Individual without having abandoned indivisibility. When you claim a private, autonomous sense of self and try to exercise it, you are saying that you have attempted, and you fooled yourself into believing that you have succeeded in dividing that which was indivisible, God, infinitely expressed. And as long as you maintain this sense of having successfully divided what is infinitely indivisible, you will seem to have you and everything else that you are infinitely divided from. It won't be a true experience. And the only reason you'll be having it and the only reason it will seem real is because you've given preference to it and you're enjoying this so-called thrill of believing that you've had the authority to do something that actually changed what couldn't be changed. Wow! You are equal to God, and you are enjoying the experience, even though it is pure illusion. Continuing. God is more than you only because He created you. But not even this would He keep from you. You see, you did not create God. And in that sense, you are not God. But you know what? The subject wouldn't even come up if you weren't at the moment indulging in a sense of independent selfhood and giving preference to it in your mind. When you abandon it, there is no sense of separation from everything. Everything does not meld into some amorphous, nebulous something that you're inseparable from. What happens is you find yourself free from having to maintain an illusion. And you find yourself free from having to defend an illusion. And you find yourself free of having to coerce others into agreeing with your illusion. You find yourself in a position with no call for defense. And you enjoy the infinite oneness. You enjoy the singularity infinitely. God is more than you only because He created you, but not even this would He keep from you. Therefore, you can create as He did, and your dissociation will not alter this. That means while you're dallying with the ego, being dissociated, that which is real and that which is true hasn't been altered in the slightest. Neither God's light nor yours is dimmed because you do not see. If you put on a blindfold, while you're standing in your backyard in the middle of the afternoon on a sunny day, well, the sun didn't go out just because everything's black for you. Reality hasn't changed just because you've dissociated and have moved into a head trip that you prefer to reality. Neither God's light nor yours is dimmed because you do not see. Because the sonship must create as one, you remember creation whenever you recognize part of creation. Remember? This is this. It's all one thing. Because you and your brother are one without merging, I'm going to put it that way. Whatever of what the Father is being that you are letting through you is creation happening that you are inseparable from. And because you and your brother are one, that which you are making your own by letting it through you to be received becomes that which your brother is able to have. The gift you give that becomes your own is the gift you give that becomes every brother's own. So, creation is you letting God's love through you in the way that God knows fulfills purpose. And that movement constitutes the movement of creation. And because you are not autonomous and separate and different from your brothers, your gift becomes the gift that they give. And when you get to keep it and you recognize it as your own, they get to keep it and recognize it as their own. And everything that they allow of the movement of love through them that constitutes the movement of creation is likewise yours to keep. And so you get to enjoy being part of, you might say, being creative. Because you're not independent and autonomous, and your willingness to be in union causes the train to go around the track, and you're able to see, ah, I'm in the movement of creation by not doing anything as a private, autonomous authorizer. And every single one of the Brotherhood has, you might say, the experience of what I am being along with me, and is blessed by what I am able to have because I gave by not doing anything as an independent authorizer. If I see the train going around the track and see the evidence of the movement of creation and am recognizing that it's the movement of creation, every other brother and sister in the Brotherhood is able to joy in the movement of the train because they all know what it means too. And they know it's inseparable from them. And this is where the singularity comes back into play. Because the sonship must create as one, you see, you remember creation whenever you recognize part of creation. Each part you remember adds to your wholeness because each part is whole. Wholeness is indivisible. But you cannot learn of your wholeness until you see it everywhere. And you're not going to see it anywhere until you stop the two-step and do the hesitation. I love you all. Ain't this fun? I look forward to being with you next week.